Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by
Nogueira. I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, episode 294. Eric Hultgren, along with the Bailing brothers, Nick and Andy, are here. They are filling in for Ken because it takes two people to fill in for Ken. So thank you to the both of you for filling in. Lifelong MMA fans, so this should be a fun thing. I know we did not have a show last week, so I wanted to make sure that we had one this week, and so I brought in two people that really know their stuff. I want to start, because we didn't have a chance last week, to break down the DC card, because I think a lot of really interesting things came out of that. And especially what's interesting is not having an event this past weekend, it allows things to breathe a little bit more. Like Ryan Bader's win over Rashad Evans. Now you have Rumble Johnson saying, you know, Ryan, your resume is terrible and I want to beat you to death in an octagon somewhere. And I think those sort of things coming out of this are interesting. But I want to start asking you guys, what were your thoughts on the main event? Do you think the judges got it right?
I'd say that the judges got that one right. As much as I am a Gustafson fan, and that's who I wanted to see win, and I was actually watching him for the win, I still would say that DC took it.
Now, let me ask you, because I know, Nick, that you've obviously trained in kickboxing and MMA and all of that stuff. Were the judges correct because my assumption is Gustafson got dinged a little bit for what appeared to be running. You know, like he would get in, get involved, and then want to get the hell away and start all over again. Do you think that dinged him on the scorecard?
I think it did, but I don't necessarily agree with that, because if anybody knows anything about me, I like to run as well.
And so explain that though. So like what's the thought process? Because you're not a guy, you're not running from the fight. What are you doing?
What you're doing is, he's such a long fighter, he has to keep that range, and DC is incredibly good at closing that distances. So he was finding the center and finding his space so that he could use his footwork and keep him at bay.
So essentially trying to control the center of the octagon and keep that distance that he wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
And your thoughts?
Well, I think the thing that with Gustafson running a little bit, as we put it, is when DC gets in close and wraps you up, he ends up going for like the wrestling slam takedown, and which he did in that fight. So,
but interesting though, he was only able to do that once.
I know, but that was like it's one of those things. It's like that's the highlight, though.
Oh, it's when totally, you, yeah, it's when totally
you,
the highlight.
When you see the highlights from the fight, that's the thing. It shows DC slamming Gustafson, and I mean, he's becoming known for that, I guess you would say, with his wrestling background. So I think that same thing that Nick just mentioned, with him being long and having that range, I mean, keeping that is what he wanted. So going in for any sort of combination or getting his shots in and then backing off, I think it was smart on his part.
And what are your thoughts? And I know, Nick, you and I have talked about this, but Andy, I don't think we have. What are your thoughts about Gus being a guy who seems to be only able to fight up to those two guys, right? Like, he plows through people, or he gets tripped up by a guy like Rumble Johnson and then puts on these two spectacular performances where he comes up short. Yeah. Talk your thoughts on that.
I think it puts him in a weird position, because he's beating it. He's one of those guys. I mean, it happens with like Chad Mendes and Benavidez or Uriah Faber. I mean, I just mentioned three alpha male guys, I guess,
sure, right.
But that tend to come short.
So I guess we know where you're going to stand when we talk about TJ Dillashaw.
But what happens with someone like with him, those guys are Gustafson, is they beat everybody below them and then they come up short against the top tier, and it puts you in a weird position. I think it would be tough as a fighter to think like, okay, I've lost to the guys ahead of me, Jones, the champ that's out, and DC, the current
Your brother
champ.
Will just call him the champ.
Yeah,
he does not really recognize Daniel as the champ at this point.
Yeah. So it puts you in a weird position, because then where do you go next? You fight, Gustafson comes in and fights, you know, someone a little lower than him in the rankings and smashes him. But is he ready for a title shot again?
Well, it opens that interesting conversation. You know, when I think back to when Demetrius Johnson fought Dominic Cruz, when that fight ended, I turned to a couple friends that I had at my house and I said, if they open a weight class below Dominic Cruz, Mighty Mouse will be unbeatable. And that's exactly what they did, right? Yeah. So you think to yourself, if they opened a 195, Mm-hmm. You know, is that a place where Gus could easily drop down 9 pounds to make that weight? Would he be successful there in a way that he's not successful against these two guys?
The goofy thing about him is he isn't a body. You don't look at him at the scale when he's weighing in and think, man, there's a pinnacle of he's not a Phil Davis.
Right. You know? Yes, yes. He's not the Adonis that you're looking for.
But he is a very big person. So that extra 9 pounds, I don't know where that would go. And
would you go the other way then?
I think he's in a tough spot. I think that what he really should be looking for is potentially better training partners. He's in Norway, Iceland. Where is he?
Well, he's Swedish, so Swedish. My guess is Sweden.
That's one of them. I know is Scandinavian. He's over there. And I think he is on a bit of an island. And I think that he could really benefit from having somebody that could step up his game, because he is missing that pinnacle, that top person. He smashes everyone below him because he can, and it's hard for him to step up because he doesn't have that person to see every single day.
Now, and I know you kind of alluded to your thoughts on this thing, but does this win cement a little bit DC's legacy? Because I read an interesting article before I get your answer that while I sort of had this view anyway, I read this article that kind of changed my opinion about the way people describe Daniel Cormier and his inability to beat Jon Jones and then becoming the champion anyway, right? If we were to take his name off this piece of paper and just hand you his resume, I think most MMA fans would want to put that guy, name redacted, into pound-for-pound best contention. But here we are. You're about to tell me that it doesn't matter because he hasn't beat Jones. And I just think that's an interesting... Is that still your opinion?
So I would put him pound for pound up there, right underneath Jon Jones. The problem is the anomaly of Jon Jones, who pretty much is the combination of Daniel Cormier and Alexander Gustafsson. Take the best of both of them,
right.
Put them together. So, yeah, he's right there with him, but it still is that thing that's lying outside of it that'll always be the thing he needs to overcome if he doesn't in the next 2 years.
And you don't think – I know you've told me this before, but you don't think that's a possibility.
It's – just not a thing that's going to happen. He could be go from the girls and boys home that he's volunteering at, go into the octagon the next day, and he wins.
Do you share your brother's opinion?
I do. I mean, I was really excited for that fight when they first fought. It was
when
all the
DC
hype.
And Jones.
DC and Jones fought. I mean, all the hype, the fight at the press conference, all of that. And then it was like Jones just smashed him so bad that I kind of lost like the intrigue of watching it again. I mean, I'll watch it again, but I see the same results coming.
But it's,
the next
it's
time.
Interesting that, you know, your point of view aside, it's interesting because you hear that from everybody who fights Jones, right? Mm-hmm. Jones, as you just said, looks like Alexander Gustafsson, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you put them side by side, right now Jones looks super jacked, but yeah. On a normal day when he hasn't been able to hit the weight room for 18 months while he mm-hmm. waits to figure out what Boys and Girls Club he has to go to for 3 hours in order to get into the octagon, they look essentially the same. Mm-hmm. But every person from Chael Sonnen to Alex, you know, to DC says when they get in there and they touch him, he just feels different than everybody else that they fought. And it's an interesting space to see a guy like that out for so long. And you are totally confident that he's going to come back in, Nick, and just be, he could literally fight in an hour and smash everybody.
Sure. Or at heavyweight as well. He does them both.
Really?
Yeah.
So let me ask you, do you just think he's that much of an anomaly, or are you somebody who doesn't think ring rust is a real thing?
I believe ring rust is a real thing, but it doesn't affect people like they want it to, like the stories tell it right. It is. If you're the guy that can do it, he might have a slow first round or something like that, and he has shown that he has weaknesses, right? He was almost in an arm bar, but he was willing to let it snap. He has been dinged and knocked down now. People have seen that, but he overcomes with his creativity, and this isn't I guess bandwagon. Does he have one of those anymore? I mean, he is.
Well, I would imagine, like, you, and I'm not against Jon Jones,
right? Like,
you know, I have his personal life aside, right? It's the same with Floyd Mayweather, right? You can admire Floyd Mayweather for what he can do in the boxing ring and think he's a terrible human being in real life, right? I don't think that Jon Jones is necessarily a terrible human being, but he's certainly not somebody I would look up to. Athleticism and his ability to do stuff in the octagon, you can't, it's undeniable. I'm not against him, but I think you guys aren't alone in thinking that not only does he win, but there's some interest in seeing him win because he's a fantastic person to see perform in the octagon.
Well, I think that whole Jones family, they're freak athletes. I mean, he's the champ, or in the UFC, and we're talking about him as he's suspended or away from the game right now. And then his two brothers are all-star NFL football players. I mean, the family has some sort of freak athleticism in them, and I think they took different paths. I think John Jones could go probably make an NFL roster if he trained in for a few years. It's just they're freak athletes, and I think that it comes out in all three of them.
Very crazy stuff. And that fight, I think, is rumored. I was listening to Luke Thomas this week talk about that he still thinks it's going to be DC Jones in New York whenever that gets approved, which we'll have to wait and see. I do want to get your opinion collectively on the Johnny Hendricks weight cut debacle, because if you've listened to this podcast for more than 3 seconds, you know that I hate the weight cut, and I hate it for stuff like this, right? Here's a guy who's walking around, you know, he says he's walking around at whatever, 207 or whatever he walks around at, and can't make the weight, and his colon shuts down, he gets kidney stones, and all of these horrible things that are happening to him. And not only does the UFC really do nothing to him other than tell him to go up to middleweight, but it, to me, sets a dangerous precedent of what this sport is going to become as these guys are trying to get any advantage they can over people like John Jones, or any advantage they can over a guy like Demetrius Johnson. Like, if I could start at 210 and come down to 125, maybe I could clip him once before he outworks me for 24 more minutes. You know. So what are your thoughts on that debacle of a weight cut?
Weight cutting is going to change. You're going to see a lot of people shifting in their weights to begin with.
But this was a number one contender match, and you couldn't get this dude to shift what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some deeper things that he needs to deal with as far as his dieting.
Would you say it has more or less to do with the fact that he owns a steakhouse a block from his house?
I'd say that would affect me quite a bit. Okay. And that's all about. And then, of course, the IVing afterwards. So they're trying to get down sooner. They're trying to be less so that they don't have to cut as much water weight. And so if he was still working out hard and doing that kind of thing, I mean, obviously dehydration leads to the things that they were saying he was doing, but it's bad dieting to begin with, and maybe having to make that like drastic cut earlier because he's thinking he needs to show up to cut his water weight lighter. And so it happened to him because he had to change his routine.
So let me get your perspective, Andy, on the difference between a guy like Tyron Woodley and Johnny Hendricks, who I think are both huge welterweights, right? Yeah. Like, Woodley doesn't seem like he's a much smaller guy who has an easier cut, but he makes it no problem. In fact, if you missed it, he actually weighed in before the telecast started just to prove that he had hit the weight.
Yeah, no, I thought that was pretty good on his part to go out there and weigh in and then jump off the scale and like he was going to fight with nothing to prove. But I think that really going into it, it's always been a thing that Hendricks says he gets up so far, and I know that a lot of guys cut a lot of weight, but I mean, I saw Johnny Hendricks at the UFC in Detroit 5 years ago now, standing on the walkway, and I feel like I could never in my life get to 170 pounds, and we were like about the same size. So I just...
But to set the stage, you're making it seem like you're 412 pounds.
No,
you're not a
no,
big-looking dude.
No,
right?
But again, I mean, getting that cut, that's really... That's hard on your body. And I mean, I've been around people that were cutting weight and getting ready for fights. And when you have to cut that much weight, I mean, it's so much harder on your body than if you're already have a little bit more of the leanness. And Nick, I was with him one time when he went a weight class lower for a Muay Thai tournament than he was used to doing. And that puts you in a different situation going down that extra 10 pounds than what you're used to doing.
Yeah, it was a completely different ball game at that time. I mean, the difference between me and him is this is an amateur thing and he's a professional and this is what he's done multiple times. So
sure.
I think, I mean, he's came close to missing a few times, but that's the name of the game. You want to be as late as possible for as little as possible and then get back to it.
Right.
So maybe he was worried about the IV and so he was trying to do it earlier so that he knew he'd have more room, and then that actually ended up backfiring on him.
So when I see this happen 2 weeks ago, it was Thursday afternoon, right, when they cut it, Wednesday or Thursday afternoon. Like, the first thing I automatically think about, and I don't know what you guys think about, but the first thing I think about is Aldo going to make it? Because to me, it seems like he's another dude that's way, way too heavy for 145, probably needs the IV, has to figure out this weight cut thing. Like, you know, I know they're hedging all of their bets that this thing is going to happen, but I see Hendricks miss and go, oh, I can name six other people, and one of them is a champ right now that we would love to see make that cut that might not.
It's the same thing. I mean, you're going to be talking the same thing as Conor McGregor. He looks like a skeleton when he steps onto the scale. They're both way too big for that class. They really should just call the next weight class up, call them champs, and have them fight for it, because they're going to have trouble with it, and you're not going to see that bloated, fully revived guy coming back into the ring. They're going to be lower in what they're doing.
So would either of you guys be fans of if they change the organization to more mirror Frankie Edgar's philosophy? Like, should it be, you know, wherever you are, you fight within 2 pounds of that? Like, is that better for the sport? Or the other thing that they're thinking of doing in connection with the WADA testing is talking about testing while you're in camp and going, you are way too heavy, we're not going to do this thing, and knowing months in advance so they can make a replacement.
I think that would be the way you could do it, because if it's like the weight that you are the day of or within 2 pounds, I think you're putting the guys would put themselves in danger.
But what I'm saying is, like, if we weighed all of us right now, like, yeah, that's where you're fighting,
right?
Right, like within two, you can drop two pounds to fight wherever we, you know, end up. Mm-hmm. You can fight within 2 pounds, and that's where you're fighting.
It's one of those things that's it's an always been wrestling, and
but that doesn't mean it's right.
No, not at all. It's just an always been, and so that's why it's part of the name of the game. There's two fights that happen in each fight. You know, it's the weigh-ins, and then it's the fight afterwards, and who's the best at the end of that thing. And having people, if they were having weigh-ins, you would see people trying to cut if they knew when they were coming to get their daily weigh-in so that they were closer and they could do that. I don't think it's the right answer to have everyone cutting these extreme amounts of weight and trying to gain size advantages, but I don't know what that answer would be to have them not do it, because they'll just find a way around it and still try to be bigger.
The other two fights that I want to talk about before we talk about the – seriously, the greatest fighter in UFC history, Sage Northcutt. I do want to talk about Benavidez mauling Bagatinov. There's another guy that you were referring to, Andy, a second ago, that always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And again, I think this kind of puts him in the same league. Like, there's just nobody at that weight division, say for the champ, that even holds a challenge for him. It didn't even look like he broke a sweat.
I feel like that it does. It puts you in a really tough situation, and you have to start trying to find. I feel like these guys that start getting put in these situations start saying, well, I'll go up weight class, or, well, I guess not going down a weight class for him right now unless he goes to the women's strawweight division.
Right.
But going up, oh, I'll fight, I'll go up. Maybe he'll try to say, well, I'll go up now and I'll fight TJ Dillashaw next, or, you know, with all of that movement, like, I think that's what these guys get put in, weird positions where they want to fight somebody or a legend or something like that to at least keep their name up high on a pay-per-view and get back into contention at some point.
So if you're Benavidez, and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but, like, let's use your example for a second without getting into what happened with Alpha Male and Elevation. We'll do that in a second. But, like, to use your example, he can't go up to fight Dillashaw because you've got Faber and you've got Cruz in that mix that people are going to pay money for. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to pay a nickel to see Benavidez fight TJ Dillashaw.
Right.
They're just not. I mean, this is a boon from a consumer standpoint. This is a boon for that weight division that Dillashaw's in, because now you're going to have huge excitement and people swirling about, like, who's going to fight whom, because you have three guys that can draw in that mix. So, yeah, it puts them in a really, really difficult position, because he's not a draw, because he's not a champ, and then he's got to fight all of these guys at 125 pounds that nobody cares about, because they don't care about Demetrius Johnson. So why would they care about you? And I don't know what you do about that.
So what I'm seeing in the UFC, which is obviously everybody wants to be the champ, and there's only one, and there's a lot more people. What is there, a 500-person roster
like
now?
514 or 5, yeah, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so we're talking about an astronomical number of people. The thing is, if you're out there building your name, I'd like to see it more like the old kickboxing K1, where your win-loss record is important to what gets you the next spot. But that championship belt is important, but it's not the end-all, be-all. There's a lot of interesting fights for everybody to step into and fight, and I want to see that.
And
so,
what to that point, what I've always found interesting is so many people want to instantly become Chael Sonnen or Conor McGregor, right? That's what they want to do. And very, very few people go, you know who's got it right? Joe Lozon's got it right. You know, there's a guy who's making an insane amount of money with endorsements, that all his stuff he does outside. He's got his hands in businesses. He's working with the Reebok people to get more out of that relationship. And he's still taking interesting fights and nowhere near the conversation about a title fight, but is always on the main card. And it's, I find it fascinating that fighters don't look at him and go, yeah, we should do that, because there's 514 people and 7 belts, right? Like, the math just doesn't, and Lord help you if you're in one of the 2 women's divisions, right? Because, like, there's just, you've got to figure that out, because the disparity between you and the champion in most of those divisions, you know, when you look at Pena and Jessica Ai, like, Ronda would beat both of them at the same time.
Oh, for sure.
They could put at the same time.
They could put them in order and have them just go. Like, each one gets to take a round, and, yeah, and it's over.
And
each
so,
one
you know,
round.
So if you're those two, yeah, you can get up and you can have a great speech with Joe Rogan, and that's funny and all to, you know, see that you want to be the foil to Ronda Rousey, but nobody takes you seriously. You beat Jessica Ai, who is 1-3-1 in the UFC. Like, that's not a, to me, that's not the path to becoming Benavidez. In a way different position than somebody like Juliana Pena.
Well, I think what some of these people do, and then they start to make a name for themselves by making comments or calling people out or whatever that is to get their name out there more. So, with Chael, he was a guy that his record's not great, but he was always in the media. He was always calling people out. He was being controversial, and it made people want to watch him. Mm-hmm. So when he was fighting actively, like, oh, Chael's fighting on this card, that'll be interesting. And you could put him in, you know, a co-main event or in the middle of a pay-per-view card, and people were excited to watch him because, one, they either couldn't stand him, or, one, they thought he was awesome. But he was almost like a wrestler, you know, mm-hmm. like a WWE-style wrestler.
Well, that's exactly – I mean, this is a guy who watched probably 250 hours of Ric Flair and became the – MMA version of Ric Flair, which worked for him, but it doesn't work for everybody. I think in some cases, as much as I like Conor McGregor and I like his shtick and I love the crazy striking. Like, I love that kind of mix-up striking that you don't see a lot.
That's why you love Sage Northcutt.
Yes, that's why I love Sage Northcutt, right? Because you don't see that stuff a lot. But it doesn't, you know, sometimes when Conor says crazy stuff, specifically like when you watch Tough 22, it doesn't work. Because he's not as great at it as Chael was. Chael had people around him who were helping him with that stuff who were just awesome at writing one-liners. And Connor's kind of seems like he's doing it himself, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. For now, he's backing it up in the ring, but who knows. So, let's talk about my friend Sage Northcutt. So if you if you're one of the 7 people that still pays for Fight Pass, you got to see Looking for a Fight, which is this new documentary series that they're working on where they travel around the country and look for fighters. And Sage was the first one that they kind of picked out of obscurity and then put him on UFC 192 against Francisco Trevino, who he mauled in about 45 seconds. The media, of course, loves those stories and wants to, you know, put the crown on him immediately. Francisco Trevino goes on to test positive for marijuana, which I find amazingly ironic and interesting in light of what's happening with Nick Diaz, right? Everybody, as soon as that Francisco story comes out, everyone goes, of course he did, loser. What a terrible piece of crap. Get him out of the UFC. And then meanwhile, they're signing their whitehouse.gov petition to get Nick Diaz reinstated for testing positive for weed. But when we talk about Sage, and people have compared him to Paige VanZant, he's moved up to TriStar to train with those guys. I will tell you, it's far too early to think this guy is anything. I think it's interesting. I think anytime you've got people that are bringing eyeballs to Fight Pass, for the love of God, I think you've got to call that a win. I don't know what your thoughts are on the kid, but I thought he looked impressive against a guy you've never heard of.
Well, what do you have with Sage, and I think this is kind of an interesting thing, is you said that they pulled him out of obscurity for his documentary that he had. They didn't pull him out of obscurity. They pulled him out of, like, a model talent book.
Right.
Like, yeah, it wasn't an accident what he looks like, and that's why he got featured in
this
thing.
Sure. And that's, of course, our friend Kevin Lee. That's his beef with him, right, is that not him in particular, but this is the model that the UFC is aiming towards, right? They're picking these guys who look like Ken dolls, so that they can raise the brand awareness. And Kevin Lee's out there trying to make a name for himself, who's been very successful in his career in the UFC, but not really getting the eyeballs that, as he said many times in interviews, that Conor McGregor gets, right? Or certainly a kid like Sage Northcutt. Like, there was more buzz about Sage Northcutt than half of the fights on this card that didn't include Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, well, I think that the UFC is starting to realize that with their new PED stance, if they can't have monsters, they might as well have models. Like, they have to draw somehow.
I wish that was the meeting, right? Well, I mean, if we can't have monsters. Let's just go get model. Did you? But you, as a guy who's been training and fighting and striking for a long time, was there anything as from a casual observer? My expertise lies much more in jiu-jitsu. But did you see anything that was impressive in that 45 seconds?
Yeah, he's an impressive striker. He's going to do well, and they're probably going to let him build like they should. He's so young. Like, let him have fights and let him grow in the UFC as opposed to throwing him to the wolves and really getting him up in, the top 10. And maybe he can draw attention to the lower card and people drawing in earlier because they know his name and he is a marketable guy. So he has talent. That's not the question. Like, he's striking. He was good. He caught him. He came on strong. He did what he can. I'd like to see what happens, you know, when he has to figure it out for two or three rounds.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two questions, right? What happens if it goes longer than 46 seconds? And what happens when you go up against a guy? Well, three questions, right? You go up against a guy with a better skill set, better resume. And three, if he's a wrestler, which negates all the crazy flying stuff, right? Because you can't do that when you're on the ground. And, you know, I know that Kevin Lee is vying to be that guy, but I think you're probably more right, and Andy, I don't know your take on this, but I think you're more right that they're probably going to pump the brakes a little bit and not feed him to a guy like Kevin Lee, because if Kevin Lee derails him, it's great for Kevin Lee, it's terrible for the UFC.
Yeah, Kevin Lee derails him.
But I don't disagree, but that's terrible for the UFC, and they should not do that. I know why Kevin wants it, and I would love for him to have it, but they shouldn't, from a business perspective, they should not do it.
Well, I feel like a similar, you had mentioned, Eric, with Paige VanZant. Like, keep her going, keep her building. She's young, she's 21. Get her in some more fights against people she'd probably beat. You can keep marketing her there. She's huge on social media. She's with all the Reebok gear, you know, really good, doing a good job promoting. But you put her in against JJ right now and she gets smashed, and then everyone's like, oh, was she as good as we thought she was? But now keep putting her against, you know, some other good 115ers, but she's going to take them down.
Well, and with both of these guys, right? So Paige is what, 21? Is that what you said?
I think so.
You know, she's 21. This kid's 19. Like, both of you guys know this because we're all of a certain age. Like, once you turn 25, your entire body changes, right? And you, these two not having gone through that, who knows how amazing they become when you add 4 or 5 more years of training and their body developing. Yeah, I think slowing them down is the way to go. And I said the same thing when they were dealing with John Jones. You know, the first two fights out, everyone was like, title shot. I'm like, whoa. Let's let him do a couple more things and figure this stuff out and you know, get his feet below him before we feed him to Shogun. And they slowed it down a little bit, but you couldn't hold them back forever. So you know, and they'll get that to that place with Paige for sure at 115. I don't know if they will with Sage, because he's fought a guy who popped positive for weed, pushed a ref, and couldn't last 45 seconds in the UFC.
I know, it was pretty funny. I was reading on some forums after that fight. People were saying, like, where'd this guy come from? The crowd, like, no one's ever heard of him.
Like Vince's WWE, where they just bring somebody out and put a singlet on him and have him wrestle the Red Rooster. Yeah, it was very similar to that.
And then it made me laugh personally when they're like, oh, he tested positive for weed. I'm like, maybe they did get him out of the crowd. Like, maybe he was smoking in the parking lot and then he came in and fought.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we got some news to break down. Ronda Rousey's mom went a little bit crazy. GSP has some big news for us, and Nick Diaz got his petition signed. So we'll talk about that next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior. Eric, along with Nick and Andy, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. We've been breaking down UFC 192 as we await next weekend, because we've had to go two whole weeks without a card. That isn't to say that there has not been a fair amount of news breaking out, including, I think I want to start here, including the GSP news that he seems to be thinking about coming back. It's harder and harder for him to stay away, which I know excites a lot of people. I've read some interesting blog posts about it, but for me, I don't think he should.
I say GSP should just stay away. He's my favorite person to
me
watch
too.
Fight.
Me too. But it's a different UFC just 2 years later.
And what is he now? 37?
36, 37, yeah.
Yeah, in that range, yeah. So that's, I mean, he's just enjoyed 2 years of life that he hasn't enjoyed for the 15 years before his career started. And life is pretty comfortable. And I'm sure that in comfort, he hasn't been doing as much as he has. And a lot of people are switching to these new styles, and it's different now, and it's going to be harder for him.
Well, and he's been training, Nick, but he's been doing training that we would do. What do you want to do today? I want to do flying drop kicks off of parallel bars. Like something you would never actually do it. Like that's what he's doing, which isn't training for a fight. And I just, when you look at those guys and you look like at a guy like Johnny Hendricks who fails to make the weight cut, they're all out there, right? It's Tyrannosaurus Rexes fighting Velociraptors at this point. Like GSP was never that big, and it's all of these monsters at this weight class right now that I think he's going to have a hard time dealing with. Not to mention him against Robbie Lawler. I don't know that I like that matchup at all in GSP's favor at all.
Well, I think GSP, you know, it since he's retired or stepped away from the sport.
Well, he said he retired. He did. It wasn't like he was going to, you know, Aruba for 2 years and he was going to come back.
We all talk about him coming back all the time. When somebody goes out on top, there's interest of him coming back. He goes out, controversial decision, but he won and he stayed the champ and then he left as the champ. And so we want to see what he could still do. We're not sitting here saying, man, I really do hope BJ Penn comes back again. In historical fashion, both guys that were really important for the sport. GSP goes out on top. We're interested in seeing him come. If he would have lost 3 out of his last 4, we wouldn't be saying, well, we really wish GSP would come back.
But what's interesting about your point, though, is both men in their last fight looked identical. When Nick Diaz beat the snot out of BJ Penn, he looked like he was hit by a truck. When Johnny Hendricks lost that decision to GSP, GSP looked like he was hit by a truck. And I think it's easy in hindsight to be like, I would love for him to come back, but you forget what he looked like in that post-fight presser. You do not want that guy to come back because these guys didn't stop training. They're still training, and they're terribly dangerous human beings. That's not to say that he's not skilled, but it moves on, and I, for one, don't want to see what happened to BJ Penn because he didn't know when to go away at the hands of Nick Diaz. I don't want to see that happen to George St. Pierre for the sake of us giving you $60. Like, I would gladly give you $60 UFC right now to tell me he's never coming back. I'll donate to a Kickstarter to make sure that he gets his pay-per-view buy without fighting.
That's the difference, and one of the things that he gets to do, which is rare, is he is not fighting, but he went on top, so he is still marketable. Sure. If you want to see him again, put him in another NOS commercial.
Yeah.
He still has his ability to make money the way that he wants to, and it's very rare that you get to see a guy leave like that, and I would rather have people say it should happen and have it not than say maybe it shouldn't and it still does,
I think the only way, though, Nick, that you would change my mind as I'm listening to you talk, the only way you could change my mind on this is if he's coming back. This is what I would do. If he's coming back to fight Anderson Silva in some sort of super fight that has no belt on the line.
Yeah, I'd take that.
I would be okay with that because I just don't think he can compete at a level where he can either get the strap itself or hang on to it. But I do think people would like to see that fight, and it serves two purposes. You get GSP back because you want to, and you get Anderson a chance to fight somebody who's been totally honorable, never been busted for anything. Like, you know, the most holistic, you know, person in the UFC in a long, long time, steps out when he's on top. The super fight I would do, going back to 170 and trying to compete, I think is a terrible idea.
Totally agreed.
I agree. They just want, UFC wants him back so people like my wife will be more interested in watching.
Totally. And my wife would be the same way. My wife loves George St. Pierre, but I think your wife and my wife, if we all watched it together, would not really be big fans by the end of whatever that fight was. Pick anybody in the top 5, I'm going to tell you that our wives would not finish those fights. They would go to bed crying that their hero was being beat up one side and down the other.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
All right, the other huge news is that TJ Dillashaw has left Team Alpha Male and moved to Elevation Training Center in Colorado. Still with Dwayne Ludwig, but has left Uriah Faber. And there's been a lot of back and forth going on. And it's an interesting story to unpack because there's so many levels to this. And some of those levels, I think, are really easy for the general public to pick up on. And some of them, I don't think are. I mean, this idea of loyalty, I think, is a difficult argument to have. Because I don't know that in the UFC, when it's only you in the octagon, I don't know that loyalty is a thing that needs to stay forever, because I feel every fighter gets to a point that they might evolve past their gym. And if they evolve past their gym, I feel that they need to move on. I don't know what you're kind of smirking.
Thinking of Kevin Lee training with me at Triumph and deciding that wasn't the best for his UFC career.
That probably was not the best for his UFC career, so he went to Vegas. But there's a guy who's been floating around training with different guys, getting different looks because he needed to evolve his tools kit. And I think one of the other things is if Uriah Faber was on the Alpha Male podcast kind of breaking down the story, which obviously comes from his side of the story, but if the one part is true that he asked Dillashaw if Dillashaw knew about anybody going to train in Denver and Dillashaw didn't really answer the question, I mean, there's where you can kind of build the character flaw in TJ Dillashaw, because to me, if you're going to do this, it's like leaving a job, right? If you're going to quit, then be an adult about it and quit. You don't slam your books down at 5 o'clock on Friday and go, peace out, everybody, I'm done here. That's not how you do that if you want to keep a relationship. If you wanted to leave, I think you should have had an adult conversation about it. That said, we all know, because we love this sport and are really, really entrenched in it, we all know that of the 514 or whatever the number is, not very many of them are eating on their UFC salary. And so if you have an opportunity as a fighter to go to a gym that's going to pay you to train, you're an idiot not to take that gig.
Oh, 100%. And, I mean, that's the biggest thing that I think a lot of people in the casual fan don't understand is you pay for your training camp. Even when you're looking at their salaries that
they
disclose.
You pay for everything, man.
Yeah, you pay for all your training partners. You pay for their flights. It's on your dollar or your manager's dollar, which then is, of course, your dollar. And that comes out of what you're doing. So if you're getting paid to train and they're bringing people in for you, it's a good thing for him. And it, like you said, you outgrow it. He left there and just got himself a lot of contenders.
Yes, for sure. And I think there's going to be a lot of people waiting for January to see what happens with the fight against Dominic Cruz. And I don't know, what your thoughts are on Dominic, but I think Dominic might fall into your John Jones category, that if he can keep his knees healthy, he's another dude that could be making, potato cakes at Arby's and step into the octagon and shellack whoever he's fighting. And I don't know that TJ Dillashaw is going to be any different.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing because they both dance so well while they're in the ring that it might just be beautiful and there's no violence.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was either reading on MMA Fighting or listening to something where they were saying that they hope that the UFC figures out a different way to shoot that fight for that very reason, because if you miss any of the nuance, you might miss where the fight happened, so to speak, because if you're not able to do it essentially in Matrix bullet time, you might miss all of the amazing stuff that's going to happen between those two. But my thoughts are, I think that Dominic is just better at that dancing than Dillashaw is at this point. I don't know what your thought is on that.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to shoot it in a slow motion GIF that you can watch after with the footwork, that's how everyone's going to be able to appreciate
like
it.
An Oculus Rift, you can watch it in 3D. Yeah. Andy, what are your thoughts on?
Well, I think they, since Dillashaw has become more prominent in the sport over the past year and a half or 2 years, Nick and I have talked about it a lot, that they look similar in the ring or
sure.
In the cage. And I think it will be interesting to see who can do it. I just hope that Cruz actually does stay healthy. I mean, he's been one of the most fun guys to watch if you're interested in the footwork and everything like that.
Oh, he hands down. I mean, that was, to go back to earlier, right? That was the most fun thing about DJ losing that fight to him, is that those two were in a very similar position, both similar styles, but Cruz was just so much better at it. And
yeah.
But you knew in watching that fight, I think similar to Dillashaw, in watching that fight, if Cruz beats Dillashaw, nobody else is going to beat Dillashaw.
Yeah.
Nobody right. else is going to beat Demetrius Johnson. Like, there's nobody at 125 that's going to beat Demetrius. There just isn't.
Well, the thing about Dillashaw is he's so moldable, and he's like Ludwig's play toy. He could come out and not be that person. He could have been that person for Barao, and he could come out and not be that person for Cruz, because Ludwig might think that he has the answer, and that might be in a stout guy that doesn't move his feet, takes the center of the octagon, and trades. So it could be a completely different look, and that just he's just wild enough that he might tell him to do that, and Dillashaw will listen to him because he's Master Splinter to him.
And then, of course, like I said earlier in the podcast, you know, when Andy was talking, that this, of course, leaves open the fight between TJ Dillashaw and Uriah Faber, regardless of what happens. I think that fight is an inevitability, right? If TJ keeps the belt, they're going to fight. If TJ loses the belt, they're certainly going to fight, because why wouldn't you? And I think that's very exciting for that weight class, because it brings some light that that weight class needs. Because, again, you know, once you get under 145, there's really not a lot of people that are plunking down $60 to watch a pay-per-view of those fights, which they probably want to change in light of the horrible weight cuts and the getting rid of the IVs and the fact that they can't have monsters anymore because they're testing for everything, right? So your shining stars right now are sub 150 as far as people that you can say for Aldo, right? But people that you can rely on to hit the weight, you know, with Lineker going up, you can now rely on Lineker to hit that weight, right? Like, but aside from Aldo, you've got a crop of people that can usually hit the weight no problem, that put on spectacular performances if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I really, going back to the beginning of that point, I think that they're going to fight at some point. And Uriah's been one of the mainstays in MMA since it's become more mainstream. I mean, he was the only WEC pay-per-view and has moved into a role in the UFC where they want to put him in good cards. They have him on Ultimate Fighter multiple times, even when he's not going to, you know, fight Conor McGregor at the end of the season. But he's likable overall, and a lot of people have watched him and followed him for a really long time. I think putting him against Dillashaw, it's creating storylines and fighting is so important, getting people interested.
Sure.
You know, talking about having a protege that Faber found out of college to come and teach him, and then having him leave to betray him. I mean, it's a storyline that they'll eat up, and I think it'll even be better if Dillashaw, for the UFC, if Dillashaw wins and stays the champ, and then Uriah wins his next fight and they can fight each other, because even if Faber wins, then I think that's even better for the UFC.
It's like Star Wars, man. It's like, you know, your MMA Darth Vader, right? Like,
well, if he comes,
Obi-Wan goes, starts the old Sith gym.
If he comes back, I mean, not if he comes back, but if TJ and Faber fight, that would be great. But I really think that this became a storyline of TJ versus Team Alpha Male.
Sure.
So Faber is just replaceable with any one of them, and you're going to be able to tell that same story.
Yeah, I think, but to Andy's point, I think Faber's your money bet, because I think Faber's a guy that can bring in the casual fan. Because to go back to his GSP example, right, like, my wife knows who Uriah Faber is. I bet your wife knows who Uriah Faber is. So you can bring in fans on a kick-ass fight card on Fox, right, where you're trying to get some extra eyeballs to convert them, that they would watch that fight for sure. So that'll be interesting to watch. Last thing I want to talk about today is this weird Ronda Rousey story that's coming out, with Ronda's mom going crazy about Edmund and how he's a terrible human being and got lucky when Ronda walked into the gym. And this whole story starts with when Ronda walked into the gym, that Edmund just ignored her for days upon weeks, and then eventually rescinded and decided to train her, and that is now making boatloads of money off of that training. But it seems to me, without the insight, that there's got to be some sort of odd backstory here as to why this is popping up. They've since taken down the two videos that have these comments in them, but I don't know that you guys have any insight into this, but it just seems weird for the mom of the fighter to be destroying the coach of the fighter leading up to a fight that's a month away.
I would say that it's weird for any time that it is not Ronda Rousey's mom.
Okay.
She's been in there. She's been outspoken about a lot of different things that are happening. But I think in Edmund's defense, when she was walking into that gym, he was a boxing and striking coach, and he wasn't really in the MMA game that deep yet. And
sure,
especially women's MMA, which didn't exist when that was trying to happen.
Right.
There was some oddities. There was some strike force things. But there wasn't a division where there was going to be people. There was going to be built up tiers and money. So I understand where he's coming from. And then, of course, her mom, I mean, that makes sense for her to say that.
Yeah, but doesn't that seems like, to me, and not having gone through an 8-week fight camp and then gone to Australia to defend my belt, it feels like that having that kind of distraction happening in your backyard is not really good for your mental wherewithal.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Ronda's mom, is it seems like they said she's dropped her off for weekends to lose, you know, 15 judo matches in one weekend when she was 11 years old, only to pick her up at the end of it. I don't think that really is where her mindset is to be with her mental wherewithal.
Fair enough. And then obviously the other Ronda Rousey story this week that's getting a lot of play is that she's finally come out and admitted that she and Travis Brown are together, which that's not really the interesting part of the story. The interesting part of the story is when you start to dig in a little bit on Travis Brown's domestic violence allegations that were, you know, it's not that they didn't find anything. They just didn't find convincing evidence to follow through with that, which to me seems like a ponderous life choice from Ronda Rousey's perspective as somebody that people are looking up to in the, you know, feminist movement. Like, this is an empowered female that's doing all these powerful things, like pairing up with a guy who's being looked at with a sideways eye for domestic disputes seems a little odd to me.
I agree. That seems a little odd. I hope that all of the stuff with Travis Brown wasn't true and that they didn't find anything because it didn't happen. That's what I would hope for personally. I think it's interesting in the MMA world when two people from the gym start dating each other.
Right.
It has to be a weird situation. With Paige VanZant and Cody Gambrant from Alpha Male dated for a little while, then broke up. But I see them in all these pictures on social media training together. It has to be a weird situation. And I feel like with Travis, he would be gone when they break up or whatever. So
there's that, right?
Weird you're, dynamic.
Not to break it down to like the complete idiot way to describe it. But yeah, it's like dating the boss's daughter, right? Like Ronda Rousey is the biggest star in the UFC, and so there's no win-win for Travis Brown in this, regardless of the allegations that just make the whole thing look wonky. But like the relationship aside, you are a guy who was a contender at one point, kind of mid-tier heavyweight at this point, which I think adds another layer of oddness in that relationship. I don't know how that would work if, you know, your girlfriend, or even if you got married, like if your girlfriend just annihilates people in the octagon and you not so much, what that would do. And then, like you said, if anything goes wrong, they're not going to side with Hoppe, you know, right? It's going to be all Ronda all day long. And that just seems like an odd choice on his behalf for that reason, but an odd choice on her behalf because of what's going on with him to be in the relationship to begin with and to, I guess, say that you're in it on Instagram.
We talked about this a little earlier, but doing what's good for your career as a fighter and making the right decisions. He's in the news a lot right now because he came out and was like, oh yeah, I'm dating Ronda Rousey, and he was a little more open about it and willing to talk about it. And Ronda said, yes, we're dating, but it's a personal life. That's all I'm going to comment on it now. Travis maybe is being a smart businessman and getting some more publicity.
He's learning from what Brendan Schaub didn't learn from, right? Because they dated for a while and nobody knew it until he said it on our Joe Rogan podcast like 2 years later, because he wasn't doing that stuff when maybe he should have. So maybe, you know, Travis Brown is figuring that stuff out and making those business decisions. And then speaking of Brendan Schaub, I know he was on Rogan's podcast over the weekend doing a fight companion where he said he's bouncing out of the UFC because of this Reebok deal, which I would love to get your thoughts on, Andy.
I mean, I think he's smart right now. He's one of those, you know, mid-tier heavyweights.
Sure.
And he's making, and he says it, I'm making more money outside of the octagon. And if I go in and have to sign this Reebok deal, I could potentially lose out on his Fighter and the Kid t-shirts that he said, I can almost guarantee that I'm selling more Fighter and the Kid t-shirts than fight kits are being sold right now.
I'll say that straight out. I would guarantee that if any fighter printed their own t-shirts, they would make more money on that than they would on those fight kits because they're expensive, and I've yet to see one. I don't know about you guys, but we hang out with a lot of people who like this sport, and I have not seen a single fight kit.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's making the right choice, though. He has a lot of other things going on for him right now. And
well, he's another guy, like, you know, in that Lozon vein, right? He's got the Fighter and the Kid, and as he was saying on the podcast, that's being turned into some sort of TV deal that's also turned into some sort of other TV drama thing that he's a part of. So, yeah, I think that, to your point, Nick, is the new model, that you need to be doing other stuff. Because if you're not Dillashaw getting paid by Elevation, or you're not John Jones or Ronda Rousey or Chris Weidman or whomever at the top of the hill, you got to figure out a way to pay your bills. And you do that by doing extracurricular activities, not figuring out how to be Neil Magny, right? Like, not everybody gets to fight seven times a year. Neil Magny fights seven times a year so he can pay his rent, right? Like, he's doing that because nobody knows who the hell he is. And you can get around that by doing Fighter and the Kid podcast and getting picked up by Fox and all of the stuff that they're working on.
Right. And I think he's been able to position himself as more than just a show or a person in the fight game. His show, Fighter and the Kid, with, you know, there's some fun to it. It's not all about fighting. It is getting a broader audience than
at this point, it's rarely about fighting. Yeah, it's a name, really.
Rarely about fighting. They throw it in every once in a while or do the Fight Companion or something with those guys or with Rogan or whoever, which they still don't really talk about fighting during Fight Companion. But
I listened. I don't know about YouTube, but I listened to the whole Fight Companion and didn't really know halfway through whatever they were watching. Yeah. Right, because they don't. There's nobody's names.
Right.
Because it was, I think it was like a kickboxing match. I think, I don't know, but.
Yeah, the last one was a Glory event where they were watching it DVR'd, so they were fast forwarding and rewinding and not telling you where they were on the whole thing. So. And then you just had to guess and listen to them. And every once in a while they'd go, oh!
Yeah,
the Joe Rogan, oh. And then that would be about it. Because my iTunes playlist for podcast is Way of the Warrior, Fighter and the Kid, and Joe Rogan. So I've listened to this thing throughout the entirety of it. And it took me from just being like, there's Brendan Schaub, like generic fighter number 7 coming out to fight, to like, oh my gosh, there's Big Brown, the guy that everybody loves, and he has all this personality, and he has this chemistry that's going on with Brian Callen that's just fantastic, and why get punched when you can just talk?
Well, yeah, so there's that, and, you know, he might have might be better at that stuff. I mean, if you're just measuring by dollars, he's better at talking than he is at fighting. And that's not a knock on what he's done in the sport, but that's more to say, like, he's kind of found his niche, and why wouldn't you walk away? I wouldn't sign that deal either if it was going to cost me, you fight 4 times a year, he gets $100,000 normally, he's going to get 10 now. So it's a $360,000 hit every year. Who would take that deal?
I wouldn't.
A $360,000 hit to get hit.
Yes, like, to get a concussion, right? Yeah. He was saying before, I don't think it was on this one, but he's been talking about this as the deal has been going on, but he's been saying, like, why would I take this deal to go fight monsters like Junior Dos Santos or Stipe Miocic or Cain Velasquez for $10,000?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if the three of us would take that deal. Like, if somebody goes, here's $10,000 for Kane to knock you out cold, I don't know that I would take that deal.
I thought you meant, like, all three of us stacked on each other's shoulders trying
to
fight.
We could do that.
I don't know.
I wouldn't take $10,000 for that deal either. For all three of us to get knocked out simultaneously doesn't sound very fun either. All right. Well, dude, thank you, guys. This has been fun.
Yeah, thank you for having
us. We'd love to have you guys back anytime that you want to. Maybe we can do our own Fight Companion and do it on DVR so that nobody knows what we're talking about. But you can get all of the news that breaks this weekend on Twitter or Facebook. Just search WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.